I'm Matt Richter, and this is our inaugural episode of You Ought to Know, the Motivation Series. And I am delighted to have my first guest, Julien Chenal from the Université de Genève. Welcome, Julien. Did I say it right?
Yeah, you say it right, Matthew. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Oh, I do worry about these things.
So. Are you okay? You can teach French now.
Well, as you know, my wife is French, and she every day she tells me you don't speak any French. So
yeah, but learning is a really quite long process. So you are in a growing perspective. That's okay.
I will be fluent in French when I'm dead.
So. Okay, that's a good objective.
Yeah. So, Julien, you are a professor of psychology and part of the faculty for the psychology department and education department at Université de Genève. Is that correct?
That's pretty correct. I'm in a psychological section, right? The faculty is education science and psychology, but we are quite separated.
And you specialize in lots of things, but specifically, and one of the reasons you're here on this show, is because you specialize in motivation, specifically self-determination theory, in all the different facets of the work you do.
Yeah, and actually I'm running here the Self-Determination Theory Geneva Center, which was built like, I would say more than 1 year ago, but we discussed with Rich Ryan about this, and he was pretty happy to have like a satellite place. So we are really, really proud of being part of this SDT community as researchers. So I have my group research here in psychology section, and we are delighted to improve knowledge on this, on different areas, as you said.
We'll get back to the center. I want to dive into that more in depth. But two of the big research areas you've spent quite a bit of time on is physical activity, the motivation of getting engaged in physical activity. What do you focus on in that category?
Actually, my PhD was in sports sciences, so I'm not really a psychologist. I have been learning and to be like at the first time a physical education teachers, but I embraced the academic career after, I would say, 4 or 5 years or during my master's studies, and I discovered what science is, and I decided to go for a PhD. So my PhD was based on what I would have been if I've been like a professional. So I studied the motivation in physical education classes. So I started to understand how kids can be motivated in this specific topic in the academic, schools, because physical activity is not the same that doing math or doing, verbal domains. And so I tried to understand how perception of competence were involved in the motivation of kids. So I was mostly interested in adolescence, where kids develop and grow. And I studied the social factors that influence motivation and self-concept in physical education classes. So, for example, I studied the effect of physical education teacher and also the school and also the different grades in different other domains. So it was really interesting because it was quite large, needed a lot of statistical skills. And so I did my PhD long time ago now, but it was my first love. Like, I'm a sports scientist. I'm really interested in physical activity. And then I developed on this area a little bit more, how to engage people in physical activity inside school or outside school, because we had some health issues with the obesity pandemic and non-communicable disease. So it's all start from here.
Well, there, I know for me at least, and particularly in the US, Health education in schools can be a terrifying thing for kids because of the some of the games we played when we were growing up were not the safest games. Dodgeball, and we even had a game called War Ball. And so these activities created a social hierarchy where those of us who were small and weak were terrified. And so that has to come into some play around how kids engage in physical activity in school.
I see. I can see your maybe American way of seeing sports, because what you are talking is about sports, and we know that sports and physical activity are quite different areas, because sports is about competition, and you know that competition is not always good for having a lasting motivation, you know. And what we are more oriented towards is to have in the first years of practice. For example, I studied in school because that's the first place where people from all backgrounds are connected to physical activity. So at this time, you have a lot to do to include most of the people to have good experiences that will lead to lasting motivation and engagement all along your life, because
What are the examples of good interactions with
The question of good or
activity?
bad motivation is, you know, from SDT is really well known. We have autonomous motivation and control motivation. So motivation that came from internal and self-related motivation. You know why you are doing stuff. You are for trying to have fun, enjoy what you are doing. It's more beneficial for good emotions, positive well-being, instead of having control motivation. For example, you want to win, or you want to be proud, you want to express your
Want to
ability.
survive.
You want to be rewarded, you know, you want to achieve to high status. You have this, you know, scholarship stuff that is really important in the US for going to university. You can have scholarships, so you develop like motivation that are maybe good or better for performance on the short term, but from a society and for an else perspective, it's not something that create I would say 70% of the people practicing. You're just saying like for having 2% of the people being professional, or maybe less than 2%, we just kill the motivation for 80% of the people.
Well, and
So
it lasts, right? If you don't catch a child young
yeah.
who identifies with physical activity as fun, meaningful, purposeful, and the associations are extrinsic, or they're ego-driven or they're status-oriented, then that's it. It's hard to get them to think of physical activity more positively.
You have a higher rate of dropout in adolescence, which you can find a really bunch of article and you know, bunch of papers that show that dropout at adolescence is really high in physical activity or in sports place, especially among girls. So because it's also like a man's world, sports. So far, if you want to reduce this dropout, and after that, if you want to have people practicing for reducing obesity, you know, with all this time that you have sedentary from nowadays, with a lot of screens time, a lot of, you know, activities that are sedentary, you need to think about where are we orienting our children. And competition is like, as long as you win, it's okay. But once you lose and you feel incompetent, you drop out. What we need is people to express to having, fun, because one of the best predictor of adulthood practice in physical activity is childhood practice in physical activity. So the most you do, the most positive experience you have, the longer you will stay practicing all along your life. And you can see like different sportsmen, really famous one after their career, you can see that they are driven by external motivation, because once they
They're
stop,
done.
they are done, they get fat and they are not practicing anymore. So that's also a way of understanding these kind of studies.
So then what are some of the strategies adults, schools, communities can put in place to make physical activity or the environment to support physical activity more engaging, more intrinsic, more autonomously supported?
You give the answer. Surprisingly, I will use the three basic psychological needs that we
surprise.
Surprise that we talk about SDT. So of course, you know, when you experience different situations, you need to have your basic psychological needs supported. And so we try to explain to teachers, to coaches, to a lot of people how they can support the needs of the child, which is not always easy to understand because they also have their own agendas. So for example, teacher, they are facing a lot of, you know, structural constraints that make also them to try to fulfill some goals, which are not necessarily oriented toward developing good motivation. For example, grades in school, basically they are not really motivating on the long term. But it's quite easy when you are doing physical education to say grades are not really important. It's not the same when you go with math, okay? And for the coaches, it's the performance that can act as a double-edged sword, because if you have your kids and you want your team to win at each weekend when you have a game, maybe sometimes you need to pressure, or you use pressure because you think it's going to have effects on the short term for winning. But at the long term, you can kill some of your kids on your team. And this is something we try to develop and explain and show. So depends on the objective that the practitioners have. You have to make them understand that there is not only one goal, the well-being of the kids also, and the motivation they develop are more important.
I can't remember if it was Ed Deasy or Rich Ryan who said this to my class, but if the competition is a natural consequence of the activity, where winning or losing doesn't matter, but the competition is just a part of the mechanics of the play, that's okay. But if the competition is
to become the goal,
the goal, then it kills everything.
That makes sense. I basically rely on their work they have done for 50 years. So I'm quite happy to understand well what they have said.
Well, and I probably, I may be misremembering this from 30 years ago, but.
No, but that's pretty nice. I think that's, you know, this is something really understandable for a lot of people. And this is why I love SDT. It's like, at the first sight, it's quite simple to understand. When you go deeper, it's getting more difficult, but you can really explain people simply some stuff that are really powerful.
Yeah.
And that's also something that we are seeing now going more outside university with a lot of people working, and with all these people having these mental issue problems, like, I don't know, well-being in work or burnout or this kind of stuff.
Well, if we transition to adults, so during the pandemic, I was I lost 70 pounds or 30 kilos during the pandemic.
Okay.
A big reason is because a diet, but we also we bought a Peloton. And
okay.
The first month or two I used the Peloton, I was just so into winning and dying. I would die for 2 days afterward. But I got into the competition of it.
Okay.
But then I stopped. You know, after enough time of that, I got tired of it and it was no longer fun. But then I kept pushing through and I started to make friends with a lot of the people in the community. And I looked forward to being with them, and I looked forward to the instructors talking, and no longer did I care about the competition. And I still use it every day. And there's definitely a different feeling of engaging in the activity when it's for
Yeah.
social reasons and pleasure, and not just trying to win the game.
Yeah. You switch from, you used and you pushed on your different needs. So first you were more focused on competency and you wanted to show yourself that you are able to grow and to beat yourself, but kind
Yeah.
of like this performance, and we are going to use another theoretical field here, but when you are oriented toward goals for performance, they are less sustainable on the long term. If you are oriented toward mastery goals for competence and you want to improve, you still want to improve, and not relying to the other point of view. So it also depends on that. But the good thing that you shown or that you did is that you try to regain motivation going to create more relatedness around your practice, which is also important because you have to feel in a place where you are connected to others and it gives sense and meaningful rationale for you to do what you are doing, which was maybe
Yeah.
lacking once you have lost so many pounds. Oh, impressive. Congratulations.
Well, it took 3 years, but it was that I really give Peloton a lot of the credit for creating an environment where I don't know if they even paid attention to any of the motivational psychology, but the social engagement was there, the self-improvement was there,
Yeah.
feedback was there. A lot of the structural requirements were there. It's a pretty impressive tool if you use it. So,
Motivational theories are pretty powerful,
yeah.
yeah.
So let's transition to a burnout. Burnout is another area of expertise that you focus on. And we're talking about burnout in more of a work environment, not so much in a health environment. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
So
We have
what are you looking at there? What's your area of study there?
which is really striking now when you go to companies in after the COVID, a lot of people realize that life is not all about work, and they started to be interested more in what they feel about work, how they feel when they're working, how they want to work. And there's, I think, this kind of switch in the mindset of a lot of people. They change work, they change their way of living, and this kind of stuff. And but it's also for me highlight the fact that a lot of people were facing mental issues at work. So we had this previous work, and in SDT there is a lot of work in the organization that show that, of course, the way the work is structured, the way the organization is pushing people to not create, not produce something, and are not really related to what we know about well-being and being efficient, and also having vitality at work and create, as you say, for example, teams that are with cohesion in
Yeah.
teams. So everything from LZT perspective is quite well known, and we are really interested now in helping this organization to train their leader to explain them how this works, from the impact that they have to their workers, because
Can we take a step back for a second?
yeah.
So a lot of companies, I work with companies, so I engage with a lot of them, and every company now is talking about well-being.
Yeah.
Every human resources team, many companies even now have a well-being department even. Teams or companies are focusing on performance management, at least in their discourse, they talk about it more positively. But I don't think they know what well-being means. And they talk about employee engagement, but if you ask them, well, what do you mean by that? It's hard to get a clear, prescriptive definition of it. So what do we mean by well-being? Give us the official definition.
Oh, I don't have an
All the
official
pressure on you.
definition. Yeah, I'm not really good at definitions. I'm a bad learner. I have not a big memory. But what I can say is that you cannot say that happiness is the same that well-being. This is how I explain people, because there is a lot of happiness seller in the business, and they try to explain that you need to be happy to well-being to be well, but this is something really different. Well-being is way of being able to function deeply, to be able to grow, to feel like totally yourself, which is what we call about being authentic. And your energy is also related to your well-being. So this is kind of like of all these related functioning that you can see in different aspects, like energy, vitality, also being yourself, feeling yourself, being able to be engaged and to want to provide, your company with good services and being like part of something. So everything is really related in well-being about you as a human being. That's what I say. People just seem to realize that workers are human beings. And when you heard people saying like, I don't understand people, they don't want to work anymore. They are not like, this new generation. It's quite different from us. From my perspective, it's only that, okay, guys, maybe you realize just that they have different goals, because they realize that maybe the planet is going to die, and they have to take care about themselves, not just rushing to work. And they are just looking at and how they can be themselves in their working life, because it's part of something bigger. So work is not life. Working is part of life. So I think that when you start to explain this a little bit differently, saying like, okay, you don't understand them, but what are they telling us? For me, what they are telling us is that you need to take care of our own needs, basic needs, and we need to take care of ourselves as human beings. And we know how to take care about human beings with SDT. So this is why I believe that we are bringing something that we already know, and we have a lot of studies, meta-analysis, intervention studies that show what we can produce. Instead, in terms of well-being, but also in terms of achievements and productivity, because you also have to understand that if you want a long-term engagement, you need energy not for 2 weeks, but for 2 years, 20 years, which is also a longer perspective, I think.
I was very happy to spend time with you in France a few months ago. And we were talking about this at dinner, and you said it beautifully. You said, look, when people over time see the meaning and value and purpose in their work, when they see why what they do matters, then their well-being goes up. When people have the structure in place to know what's expected of them, to feel that they're getting better at what they do, to feel that they have easy access to the tools and resources they need, their well-being goes up. And when they see that they're valued and respected by both the organization, their boss, and their peers, their well-being goes up. When they like the people they're around, their well-being goes up. And so there are things you talked about that if the environment has them, positively affects well-being. And then we align that in our conversation to burnout, and that when you take those away over time, that's when you get burnout.
Yeah, exactly. That's, one time in a while, you don't have to be always good, always, but if it lasts like for long term and you are consistently frustrated in your work and in this, you know, in this need, at one point you are more thwarting yourself against, and you don't have energy for doing what you have to do. Your energy is just based to beat against all this, you know, these threats. When you have fun on something, you know, when you are passionate for something, you don't see the hours. When you are starting a book that you like, you can read it like for hours, and you look at this and you say, okay, it's almost four hours. When you don't see the time spending, it's like good stuff. It's because you are totally and fully involved, and you don't care about how long it lasts, because that's okay. We went on a training like 2 weeks ago, and the trainees were just like, it was noon, and we said, okay, stop, we have to go lunch. And it was just like, come on, already. We started at 8:30, and it was just like, oh, it's already noon. So yes, we haven't seen the time spent. So for me, it's kind of like of an indicator of, okay, we did great, because they were just totally involved in that. And I think that's really something everyone can understand. When you do something you have fun, or you like, you can do it like every day or all day long.
What I really like about what we're talking about is the proposed topic for this conversation right now was burnout. We're not talking about burnout. We're talking
Oh,
about being,
yeah, but that's
right?
related, because burnout is the opposite mechanism. You know, this is like a circle. So once you get energy, you have more energy, you develop and you grow. The less you have, at one point you try to, I don't have the English word, but you start to boom, and then so, and this is creating
That is the English word.
okay.
Oh.
No, I don't have the English, but I'm sorry. But yeah, and at one point there is a lot of literature now trying to explain and to demonstrate that even if you have a company or an organization that is threatening your needs, or you know, thwarting your needs, you can also create some space for develop your own needs. So it's called like job crafting. So if I spoke about myself, it's just like, yeah, I have the more energy when I'm doing what I like, and I have this ability to create some space. So being with you talking today, for me, it's something like this. When you ask me, do you want to do that? It's just like, yeah, it would be fun, and I'm feeling good. When I went to this training 2 weeks ago, my postdoc came to me and said, Julien, you were so, you know, smiley, and you were so energetic, and you were so nice. And I felt really good, because I was fully, you know, in what I like, just transmitting and talking about all this stuff. You don't keep your energy, so you give more that energy than you have. But in the opposite situation, when you start to have some constraint, it's really costly for having people doing stuff. So if you look and you think about the company, you need to invest more money to have the same productivity for the people you have, because they are reluctant to give energy for their work, you
And I
know?
think this is so our friend Jacques Ferret has written quite a bit about the financial benefits,
The book.
right?
Whoa.
Yeah. Wait, there you go. Hey, lift it up just a little higher.
Jack, you.
Hey, Jacques, for you. So this is what one of the big things he talks about is that, hey, there's a financial benefit to companies doing the right thing.
Exactly.
And that's really important for people to take away. But I want to link back to some of these factors. There's a correlation between healthy lifestyles, right? Being healthy, eating well, exercising, and your overall well-being in general, like your well-being at work, your well-being in your life. And we keep dropping Rich's name. But Rich was talking about at the conference last year that it saddens him when people talk about work-life balance, because work should be enjoyable. Work should be pleasurable. It should be a part of everything you do. And I thought that was profound. And so, what is the correlation then between getting burned out, or on the flip side, having positive well-being in work, and also having a healthy, physically healthy lifestyle?
Oh, that's more and more large when you see it from this perspective. Obviously, for psychological well-being, and we talk about mental health, we have huge evidence of physical activity effects on the body. So that has nothing to do with psychology. It's more like you have benefits from physical activity according to your how do you say that for hormone stuff and development, and also you decrease your rumination, so it's psychology, but you also have better abilities that provide your body and etc. So of course it makes you sleep better, which is at the end of the day when you, for example, if you have these work issues and then you go having a run, you will sleep better. But if you don't go to run, it could be like ruminating all night long and you will have a good sleep and then you go back, etc. So it can give you like this, what we call rehabilitation part of your life. You need to.
It makes resilience
Yeah,
easier, right?
it helps you to maintain a bad situation longer. It could help you. So, but basically it's really good for your mental health, physical activity by itself. But if you have work issues, it's also a way of, okay, I need to disconnect and being in your life. So this is not a good practice to increase physical activity because your work is really not bad for your mental health, but this is something that help you in your everyday life. So they are disconnected, but if you look at the same way, there is a lot of no study that try to mix and to induce working programs with physical activity at work to help people to deal with this mental charge you have. I have some colleague in France that doing that. I can talk about it if you want. But one of my colleague, Isola Gother, Sandrine, she do like this kind of work. There are also people that try to mix between the physiological needs and the basic psychological needs, how they are connected and how they can also restore some of this issue. With Martin, I think, in the game group. We cannot look at all this different stuff separately, but also together will give us a better picture. But for me, all of this is connected.
And one more question.
Okay.
There are lots of people in the world who don't have at least the perceived agency to advocate for their needs. They're working two or three jobs. They are working jobs that are not fun. Their jobs are menial, they're tough, they're painful, and they do so out of a requirement. So when we say things like they should be happy at work, they should find pleasure in what they do, that can be heard almost contemptuously by them, like with an eye roll, because they don't have the capacity to do that. So how do we work with them to be able to advocate more, or to take more agency to in their own motivational health?
But first is always emergency, it's always to deal with emergency, like health emergency or life emergency. So it depends on the stage you are, of course. But at one point, when you need to go, it's to create positive circles. So start with maybe something really small. And after that, you try to expand it on the broader part of your life. So that's what we discuss with trainees and say like, okay, but if you have a lot of requirement from your work, how can you just deal with that and live with it every day. And we discuss and emphasize that this is not, you have to go and take pleasure for everything. But as long as you try to create opportunities every day at every moment that you can have them, it will produce something bigger at one point. And all these small steps, small events, or small pieces of work that you are doing that create you space for your own needs, at the end, they will be beneficial. So, of course, it could help you maybe just to keep on track for the next step, which could be, I don't know, quit or having this kind of situation. But as long as you know that you cannot move from this place, you have to deal with that. So there is there are these studies that try you to okay to cope with, to deal with, coping strategies or restoring needs satisfaction in some ways. So of course it can be inside work, but outside, as you mentioned, could be really important. So I don't know if there is a lot of work on this, research or academics work on that. It's really difficult to have this between domain stuff, but definitely I would say that one of the greatest researcher in SDT, whose name is Luc Peltier, was considering this kind of stuff, looking at the difference between two domains and how they can restore. So for example, if you are frustrated in one domain, you can go in another domain to restore your satisfaction of the need, and this will help you in this. This is not a solution, but a lot of workers cannot just quit and ch decide to change life from there and another. So you can look and see the balance between the different domains, and your need satisfaction could be also. That's what I would say from my knowledge.
All right, last comment.
Okay.
So, what one piece of advice would you give to a person who wants to exercise more and do so more intrinsically?
Oh, okay. I've been involved in a podcast last week in French, and they asked me one sentence, and I take this one.
Okay. Good.
So,
We're going to have a bigger audience than them.
but let me translate it
It's
in
not a
English.
competition.
No. Okay. I have to remember that sentence. So this is.
Is it going to be in French?
No, I will tell you in English. Okay. So victory is not the way to smile. This is the smile that is leading to victory. You know what I mean? Does it sound
So
good?
the victory doesn't make you happy, but
Yeah,
if
that's
you
not.
have fun, you end up victorious.
Yeah, that's something like this. When you win something, so it's more like winning does not have to lead to smile. This is smile that will lead you to win, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like in both ways, when you smile, even if you don't win, you're winning. But if you don't win, you don't have smiles in the first option. So that's why I like this idea of, in one point, you are always a winner if you start from smiling to go to
Yeah.
winning, instead of starting off winning for smiling. So I like this way of seeing. I think it's really good for SDT perspective.
Well, one of the great things, I always smile when I'm with you. So it's always a pleasure to be with you, Julian.
That's really nice. I really enjoy also your talk, and I think we will have more in France or
Yeah.
in
Well,
Switzerland soon. Yeah.
I plan, I'll be back the whole month of June. I'll be in France, so we'll
Yeah.
definitely see each other then.
And let's see, some stuff will arrive. You will come in Switzerland maybe
I
soon.
love that. Yeah.
We'll see that. Okay.
So, thank you so much, Julian.
Thank you, Matthew.